Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Encyclical Makes Waves. The director of the Rome office of a think tank for the study of religion and liberty gives his impressions on Pope Benedict's social encyclical. And community breakdown. The social disaggregation and loss of ties in today's Britain is the subject of a new book by a Catholic professor and touches on many of the themes raised by Pope Benedict in his newest encyclical. Like a stone thrown into a pond, Pope Benedict's latest encyclical, Caritas in Veritate, made a big splash and waves when released, and the ripple effects from that are continuing to be felt across the wider international community. In the document, the Pope calls for a new world financial order guided by ethics, human dignity, and the search for the common good. He also outlines the goals and values needed for true human development. And in today's programme, I shall be following some of those ripples that are coming in the wake of the encyclical's publication, as people and thinkers around the world read it and give their feedback on this groundbreaking papal document. Kishore Jayabalin is the director of the Rome office of the Acton Institute, a think tank whose mission is to promote a free and virtuous society characterised by individual liberty and sustained by religious principles. My colleague Charles Collins asked Jayabalin for his impressions after reading Caritas in Veritate.
It's a very moral and theological perspective on the issue of international development, which is, of course, if you think about it, it's not surprising that the Pope would have something moral and theological to say on international development. But most international development experts might make a moral claim that there should be more money given to developing countries and such. But this is a much different type of appeal. It's that within the arena of international development, that moral and ethical concerns about the human person, the truth of the human person, come first, above any kind of schemes we might have from an economic or a political perspective, the truth about the human person. So having a charitable concern for somebody means not denying the truth, but in fact affirming the truth that the Catholic Church proposes, which is that all human beings are created in the image and likeness of God, and all of them have human dignity, regardless of their social or economic standing.
Now, the Holy Father mentions in his encyclical, a previous one by Paul VI, the Populorum Progressio. This is the latest in a series of the so-called social encyclicals. Can you tell us how this document has built on these earlier documents?
Social encyclicals tend to build on each other in the sense that modern Catholic social teaching starts in 1891 with Leo XIII, Rerum Novarum, who had to address the Marxist critique of the situation of the working classes in the Industrial Revolution. So almost every social encyclical has focused on the labor-capital relationship, it's often called, the situation of workers. I would say this encyclical goes much beyond the average social encyclical in that it talks about issues like the right to life, family, marriage, the demographic situation, and how those things affect our understanding of economics and of the working class. And in a way, the situation of the worker, while it's still very important from the perspective of this last encyclical, in a way, the concerns that Pope Benedict has shown show that it's not simply a matter of labor unions, even though that's mentioned in this encyclical as well. But the truth about the human person becomes the center of all our social concerns. And that's something the Holy See has often proposed in international arenas. But it's not something that's been front and center when people discuss Catholic social teaching, and it should be.
What do you mean exactly when you say the human person should be center? In a practical sense, what does that mean?
Well, in a practical sense, it means that any kind of development scheme shouldn't focus simply on structures, right? It should actually look at what are the aspirations of the average human person, let's say, in a society. So it can't ignore things like marriage and family and education. It can't ignore that the situation of people in developing countries is often one where they might have to move to a new country, so immigration becomes an issue. It means that it's not simply a matter of international institutions developing schemes, that it somehow has to allow people breathing space. Now, breathing space is a term that's used three times in the cyclical, but the breathing space aspect means developing a vibrant and diverse civil society, not allowing central planning to decide every single aspect of a person's life when they're living in a developing country. And also that donors themselves have a role to play in deciding how their money is spent. The Holy Father mentions that people should have an option in how their tax dollars are spent, for example. These are ways of putting the person, the individual person, at the center of the schemes rather than allowing a bureaucracy to take over the running of development from an international perspective.
This encyclical does come out in a very stark time in the world economy, both because of the recent crisis, the housing bubble bursting, the financial institutions collapsing. Can you tell us how much of this document is about here and now? How much of it addresses this crisis? And how much of it is aimed, in some way, would you say, at the world leaders in general?
I think the social encyclical Caritas in Veritate isn't aimed strictly at the financial crisis. There's not a whole lot about the roots of this particular financial crisis in the document. There's nothing about housing, for example, or nothing so much about lending or borrowing and how that leads to bubbles in a certain part of the economy. None of that is addressed in this encyclical. I would say it has a much longer-term perspective that ethics and economics needs to be made integral. Integral is a word that's used often in this encyclical. Not to look at ethics and economics as separate aspects of international development, not to look at business ethics as a separate course rather than finance, let's say, in business schools, but to be able to integrate these, not only for political leaders either. And in a way, I think Pope Benedict is talking over the heads of political leaders.
Now, your institute deals with religion and liberty, looking often at economic systems and economics in general. One thing he talks about is that he points out the necessity of a system with three subjects: the market, the state, and civil society. Often when people hear the word market, they think of unbridled capitalism, the downtrodden masses. He's the second pope to bring this up, this idea of how the market is part of, is the necessary part. Can you tell us how these things relate, the market, the state, and civil society?
Sure. I mean, for a good part of 200 years, it was assumed that the market and capitalism are some things that just run wild, and the state and civil society need to control them. Now, that can be true if you have a market system where there's no real moral education of the actors in the market. If business people and consumers and producers aren't trained to have any kind of moral perspective or ethical basis for their actions, you could very, very easily have an untrammeled market which needs to be controlled more strictly than it would otherwise. Now, civil society and the state still have a role in market economies, but what the market economy actually is simply, it's not really a system in the sense that you're simply allowing people to make transactions, to come together and find out what the optimal buying and selling situation is among themselves based on their own needs. And in many ways, this fits together with the principle of subsidiarity, which allows individuals and families and local communities to make decisions that affect them. And they have the first and foremost responsibility to do so. Now, if for some reason they're unable to, or there's simply a larger problem that's involved, different levels of authority have the duty to assist those individuals and families and local communities. So at the same time, where the markets is a necessary aspect of a thriving society, it's not sufficient. And I think the Pope's great service in this encyclical is to provide us with a moral and ethical framework to determine what are the new structures within civil society, if it's given the breathing space and the freedom to do so. What kind of new structures can we develop that go beyond the profit motive? Now, of course, the profit motive is an important part and it's a necessary aspect of the market economy, but it's not everything. And I think that's one aspect that the Pope wants us to take into further consideration.
Another thing that the Pope touches on is the need for more development aid. He encourages developed nations to allocate larger portions of their GDP for development aid. Some people would say this has been tried, that, you know, more money down a bottomless hole. Others say that, no, the real reason is there hasn't been enough money given to help undeveloped countries develop. How important is it that the money be increased, and how important is it that the money be used efficiently?
Well, the call for increased international development aid, or ODA, overall development assistance, as it's often called in the lingo that governments and international institutions use, was a call that was made in Parlamento Progressivo more than 40 years ago. And if you look at the record of the last 40 years, it's not very impressive. Not only has there been a lot of money spent, but it's often been used for purposes other than it was intended to. It often, money from government to government often ends up in the hands of corrupt leaders who will then ship it off to foreign bank accounts or use it for things that do not affect the integral human development of the people of their countries. So in many ways, Pope Benedict is saying, well, there should be more of a commitment from developed nations. But he also says there should be checks against bureaucracies taking over. There should be checks against corruption. And there needs to be a way for the money to actually accomplish what it's meant to accomplish. And that's something that, if you look at the past 40 years, international trade tends to be a much more effective form of lifting people out of poverty. China and India suffice as two large recent examples. They've had plenty of international aid. They've received plenty of international aid over the last 40 years. But it wasn't until they liberalized their economies and allowed their people to use their talents to grow out of poverty and create wealth. And I mean, that's the important thing. The creation of wealth is how people get out of poverty, not simply a matter of transferring income from rich to poor countries.
How do you think this encyclical relates to the Pope's previous encyclicals?
Well, I would say the first two, Deus Caritas Est and Spes Salvi, were equally theological, and they didn't try to address as many social and economic concerns as an overtly social encyclical like Caritas in Veritate does. But at the same time, the Holy Father's expertise in theology is so evident when you recognize his language. In the first two encyclicals, he went well beyond the scope of a normal encyclical by referring to all kinds of non-Christian and authors who have critiqued Christianity. In this encyclical, he hasn't really looked at the problems. He hasn't been as critical in an intellectual sense. He hasn't looked at competing theories of development or anything. So, but in a way, I still think it fits because he is trying to bring the theological and moral element into the everyday thinking and lives of his flock primarily, but also to all people of goodwill, as he says. And it's not often when a pope decides to write about a social and economic issue at length like he has here. And this is a very long document. It demands a lot of attention, a lot of study, to determine what exactly the Pope is trying to get us to do. It's clear that he wants us to respect human dignity and to encourage solidarity among all the peoples of the world. But going from being neighbors to being brothers, as he puts it, requires a conversion of heart. And it's not something that I don't think he expects to happen overnight, and it's not something that reading an encyclical is going to get you to do, but it really requires you to approach every aspect of your life in a different way.
That was Kishore Jayabalin, director of the Rome office of the Acton Institute, talking to my colleague Charles Collins. Although the primary theme of Pope Benedict's latest encyclical was economic and social issues, the document was wide-ranging in its scope and analysis. Pope Benedict stresses that the human race is a single family working in true communion, and expresses concern about the lack of solidarity and fraternity visible in today's society. And this lack of a true community spirit is the main theme of a new book entitled Desocialization: The Crisis of Postmodernity, that looks at the lack of ties or social disaggregation in present-day Britain. The book's author is Matthew Ford, a Catholic and professor of modern history who teaches at the Pontifical Lumsa University in Rome. He began by telling me what prompted him to write this book.
Well, about 25 years ago, in my mid-20s, when I was living in Great Britain, I became increasingly aware of the dynamics moving towards a loss of ties at a whole series of levels. I use the term desocialization in the sense of cultural realities which systematically impose upon people isolation and loneliness in a whole series of forms. And what I've noticed over the last 25 years is that, in fact, these dynamics have intensified.
So, why? Why have they intensified, in your view?
I think it's because the fundamental bases of authentic community have become increasingly weakened, and a weakening process becomes really an accelerating process. But I think that these dynamics were already very apparent in the 1970s, and certainly the statistics that have emerged over the last 25 years have indicated really an intensifying process. If one looks at statistics, for example, on the disintegration of the family, this is very evident, or elements like the increase in crime and of violence and so forth.
And what, in your view, are the main reasons for this?
Well, in the Western world, where desocialization is increasingly felt, there are, of course, a whole series of thinkers and philosophers who address themselves to this question. One can think of Etzioni in America, Putnam as well. A number of French authors are also very interested in the subject. Now there's an increasing consensus, I would say, that in the Western world we are faced on a very broad front with these realities of increasing isolation, loneliness and non-belonging. 25 years ago, this kind of agreement wasn't there. I think the major divergence now is the explanation. And here there are major divergences which are based on different views of the world and different views of man. Now, my book is a Christian, a Catholic critique of desocialization. That is to say that I believe the only way we can really understand this phenomenon is through a Christian view of what man is, what culture should be, what society should be, and what the cosmos is. So it is, therefore, a Christian critique. Now, my central idea is that nowadays, rather than having a correct vision of man and recognizing the soul in man and recognizing spirituality in man and recognizing that the stewardship of the soul naturally leads to love for love and love for truth, which is the essential basis for true community at all levels. Instead of this, with the processes of de-Christianization, which in Great Britain have been extremely intense, we've got the establishment of alternative views of man. These are materialist views of man, which do not see the spiritual in man and do not see the transcendent in the cosmos. And these views of man, which I call false anthropologies, I mean the idea that man is his body or that man is his psyche or that man is a product of society or man is a creature that strives after power or wealth, I mean I list them all, that these anthropologies systematically generate selfish individualism. And selfish individualism cannot sustain authentic community. In fact, it goes against it. At the same time, of course, we've got relativism, the denial of truth. Relativism murders truth. It also actually murders itself because when applied to itself, it collapses. But it assaults a truth. So these false anthropologies, these false visions of man with relativism assault love for love and love for truth, which is the Christian message, which is the gospel message, and therefore make authentic community impossible. And my thesis is that the ravages, the devastating ravages that we're seeing and the enormous suffering that we're seeing now in Great Britain are a direct result of this revolution of visions of man, which, of course, is not only of the last decades. It's deeply rooted in the history of the West and goes back to the Enlightenment and beyond and also to humanism. But it's particularly intensified in the last few decades with really the very intense process of de-Christianization, the fact that essentially now we're living in a post-Christian culture.
I know it's difficult to point fingers here, but I mean, do you think in some ways government has played their role in this de-Christianization, this secularization, or do you think it's a process that was anyhow astir and we got it also from other countries?
I mean, de-Christianization in Great Britain, according to the statistics we have, really very rapidly accelerates after the Second World War. Now, the question is, why is it that a nation which in the 19th century was one of the most Christian nations in Europe, where religiosity was very high, where Christian culture was very widely disseminated, why has this de-Christianization taken place? Now, that's a very big question, and it's a question which historians must address. I think there are a whole series of factors. The analysis is very problematic. What I notice particularly is the role of the intelligentsia, the role of intellectuals, the role of authors, and the role of writers.
What about the role of the media?
Well, the role of the media as well, perhaps. But I think that if you look at people who are sort of generating thought and generating thinking, also the universities, also the schools, you're observing currents of thought which have a very important role in assaulting Christian culture. And it seems to me now, no accident in this trajectory, that when one considers what we call political correctness, at the center of which, of course, is the doctrine of relativism. Political correctness essentially is the political expression of the philosophical current that we call postmodernism. The adherents of this movement are extremely strong now in the powerpoints of cultural formation. I'm referring to schools, I'm referring to universities in particular, publishing houses, television, radio, and large areas of the newspapers. And when you read the ideas of these people, their views of man, their views of society, their views of the cosmos, you can see not only very often are they non-Christian, but they're positively anti-Christian.
You talked a number of times there about relativism, and this, of course, is a theme that was raised, one of the many themes, should I say, raised by Pope Benedict in his newest encyclical. What's your impression of this latest papal encyclical?
I think this is a wonderful encyclical. When Pope Ratzinger was elected...
Pope Benedict.
I beg your pardon, Pope Benedict. I had the feeling that just as John Paul II had, as part of his papacy, directed our attention towards the impact of materialism in the communist world, particularly in Europe, I thought that Pope Benedict, one of the things he would do would be to direct our attention towards materialism in the Western world. And I felt this very much reading the homily on the eve of his election, in which he expressed the view that we were constructing a dictatorship of relativism. Now, I have followed his speech with very great care, and one can see that on a number of occasions he is directing our attention to what has been happening in the Western world, and it seems to me that he's very, very sensitive to the kind of themes that I address in my book.
Yes, I was going to say, can you perhaps talk about some of these parallel themes that are mentioned in your book and are also in Caritas in Veritate?
Yeah, it seems to me that this encyclical, of course, presents the social doctrine of the Church, and it presents a whole series of ideas, principles, approaches, philosophy and so forth, which are designed to help man achieve true community, true society, authentic experience with each other. Of course, being that kind of document, it's not specifically directed towards desocialization in the West. But nevertheless, anybody who's very interested in desocialization in the West is going to look in this encyclical for certain key ideas and certain points of departure that can help in our analysis. Now, for example, what I say in my book is that if we abandon the vision of the soul in man, if we abandon spirituality in man, if we abandon the idea that healthy spirituality generates community because spirituality and community are proportionate. If one takes that point of view, one can see, for example, that near the end of the encyclical, the Pope says the question of development is closely bound up with our understanding of the human soul. I mean, there's a very, very clear statement of how we must remember the spiritual dimension of man if we want to create an authentic society. Other very important statements, which are very strategically located in the encyclical, which have very much struck me. For example, at the beginning of chapter 5, and chapter 5 is a very incisive chapter, but right at the beginning, the Pope says, one of the deepest forms of poverty a person can experience is isolation. Now, this immediately alerts us to how man is called to community. In Genesis, we're told it's not good that man should be alone. It's a kind of rallying cry, in a way, by the Pope. On other occasions, both as cardinal and as Pope, he's talked about isolation and disintegration of family and also depression that can follow from this sort of things. But this is a statement that we should really look at the Western world, at this kind of poverty, which is not necessarily material poverty, but it's human poverty and it's emotional poverty and poverty of isolation. Take another very important statement, again, very strategically located. At the beginning of chapter 4, the Pope says, many people today would claim that they owe nothing to anyone except to themselves. Now, anyone studying the West and studying Great Britain immediately sees the lifestyle of selfish individualism. The idea that love for neighbour is not an ethical imperative. Love for neighbour is an ethical imperative. It's what we are called to do by divine law. And this statement also very much alerts anybody studying the West to exactly this kind of problem, is that we're not thinking in social terms, we're not thinking in terms of responsibility, we're not thinking really in terms of authentic morals and ethics. That would bring me to another point. What's very interesting also when reading this encyclical in relation to the economy, in relation to the market economy, is the Pope says very, very clearly that there must be an ethical presence. That is to say that, you know, we cannot accept relativistic positions, we cannot accept nihilistic positions. We have to accept the idea that we ought to behave towards people in a certain way. We ought to express love for neighbour in our economic relationships as well. And this, of course, is extremely pertinent, particularly now when the Western world and the world more generally is going through an economic crisis, when we have to pose the question, why is this occurring?
Indeed, I mean, and that's obviously why there was so much interest, I think, in this encyclical, precisely, as you say, because we are going through this crisis. And he was pointing to the way, if not, you know, technical solutions to get out of it, but at least the principles we should live by and apply in our
lives. And I would absolutely entirely agree with this, of course, in my own humble capacity. And certainly when reading the encyclical, I saw all these points and these observations, which for me personally were enormous relevance to what I've been trying to write about at a much lower level, of course.
I was talking to Matthew Ford, the author of a new book entitled Desocialization: The Crisis of Postmodernity. Well, that's all for today, but we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow. And you can always find our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.